Audio for the Retro Computing Roundtable is hosted by CyberEars. When you need a rock-solid platform to host and distribute your podcast or other audio media, head over to CyberEars.com. Fast, reliable hosting with unlimited bandwidth. CyberEars is your audio on your terms. It's July 5th, 2015, and welcome to episode 104 of the Retro Computing Roundtable.
Well, it seems the Emerald City is far behind me now, and my world has changed back from black to white. But no matter where I go, there's just one thing I'd like to know.
RCR is a podcast about retro computing news, nostalgia, and collecting, but you know what? You knew all that already. And when I'm host, it's a quick show. So let's jump in, and I'm going to introduce you to the others in the triangular table that we have set up for today. The first, well, first among equals, is Paul Hagstrom. You know him, you love him. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Carrington. Hello, Michael. Hello, all. Oh, I gave it away.
Oh, you gave it away. Okay, well then, let's introduce him. We will let him speak as well. The furthest away of the retro computing, but first in our hearts, of course, always, Michael Mulhern. How you doing, Michael?
Doing good. How are you, gents?
I'm fantastic.
Oh, we know that.
And I'm going to be in for the whole show. Look at me. I'm going to be an entire episode of Carrington. Can you take it? Can you take it? You can take it. So because I'm the host, I get to select the host's topic, and I like to come up with a topic title for my topics, and this time the topic title for my topic is Think Again. And here's a little blurb I've stuck in our show notes. I'm going to read it to you. Recently, the Lenovo blog floated the idea of a ThinkPad time machine, basically a new ThinkPad that would take its design cues from the classic ThinkPads of yore. Yes, folks, I actually write words like yore into our show notes. So I have a little link here, which we will throw in the show notes for everyone to go check a look at. But basically, this idea here is that they would come out with a modern ThinkPad that would feature the classic design cues, the old ones, yore, as I said. So blue enter key, 7-row keyboard, multicolor ThinkPad logo, so messing with the logo, dedicated volume controls, rubberized paint, exposed screws, the whole thing. So my question for my fellow panelists here is, does this sort of thing appeal to you? And if so, in particular, what old, you know, quote-unquote old design from whatever, any sort of old hardware, would you like to see resurrected as modern hardware? We have often talked about the idea of, what if you take an old computer, you strip out his guts, and you put a new thing in it? I'm not talking about doing that. I'm not talking about destroying anything old. I mean a company who owns the, say, IP of a particular industrial design reissues it in the way that ThinkPad might. So what old piece of tech, or something that looks kind of like old tech, would you like to see come out with modern, newfangled guts? What do you miss most of all when it comes to industrial design? So, Paul, let's start with you. What, first of all, do you like the idea of doing something like this at all? And if so, what would you like to see resurrected?
Well, I think this is pretty cool. The ThinkPad thing, it's made thinner, but still looks the same and has that weird little control.
Oh, the thing on the keyboard, the little nipple thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
People who love those. I was never a ThinkPad guy, but whoa, the ThinkPad people loved their little keyboard nipples.
But yeah, so this actually lends itself really well to this kind of a design. Most of the things that I have personal nostalgia for don't really, you know, like they're huge. So, you know, it's like maybe a little classic Mac shaped thing, you know, that was still kind of modern, would be interesting to me, but, it would be kind of fun to play with stuff like, what is it, the Commodore SX64, you know, like try to do something useful with that form. I don't know. Actually, it's a tough question. This one seems like a good idea. But but I'm not coming up with any other good ideas like this.
Maybe, and that is why you will not be employed by Lenovo. Thinking about the next one. But the thing is, I think what they've done here that was important is they have made it thinner. It's not like they're just taking an exact ThinkPad from before, giving it a higher resolution and a lot of empty space inside. It's being redone. But when you look at it, it kind of looks like as if they never changed the basic industrial design. They just moved on 20 years. So just got thinner, got lighter. But for the most part, couldn't let go of the design cues, same logo, same color, same keyboard, all of that. So that's what I find kind of interesting, because we've seen and we've talked about before a bit of industrial design kit that came out or was shown off recently in prototype of that super crazy thin version of the original Toaster Mac. So it looked like a Mac, but just if you turned it sideways, it was half an inch thin, but it had the shape of the Mac. That's the same sort of idea. They said, well, how much thinner could we make that today? Well, it could be a centimeter. So I think that's kind of neat. So what about you, Michael? Like the idea, hate the idea, and if you do like it, what would you like to see resurrected?
Well, I like the idea of what Lenovo's proposing, so that, as you said, they're allowing you to have a modern machine but with a little bit of retro style. And it possibly might make me go back and buy a ThinkPad. I used to be quite a ThinkPad user. It was the standard machine, portable, where I used to work. And I quite liked the keyboard pointer. It took me a while to actually get used to using a trackpad after using the pointer for so long, but that's just a hands-on keyboard sort of operation that I do. These newfangled mouse things, I just haven't really got the hang of them yet. But
you don't have a third hand? The rest of us have a third hand.
No,
oh, that would hold you back. Yeah, two for the keyboard, one for the mouse, obviously.
Well, there you are. They build people differently at your end of the world, obviously.
We've moved on. We've evolved, and I guess we just never told you. Third hand, it's big here.
Ah, that's what they call it. Moving on, evolved. Yeah, okay. Not quite the way I would have described a three-handed person, but yep, okay. But yeah, as to a machine that I would like to see, yeah, that classic Mac that came in the thin for the front profile style, that's the kind of thing that I'd like to see take up this idea. I don't think I'd really want to see, say, a C64 or one of those Amigas taking that sort of classic retro style and putting a new machine in. It's not really for me. There are a lot of people out there that do want to have that retro-styled machine with the new innards, but that's just not what I'm interested in. So I suppose I would like to see a modern version of the Apple Portable. I quite like the idea of the trackball. Swap in a trackball or a trackpad.
Oh yeah, because it can move around. You could have it on either side.
Oh, and I've seen on eBay those rare left-handed trackball units as well.
Very rare.
Yeah. So no, I think I'd like to see a modern interpretation of that style. I don't know if they could quite get the thinness in there using a trackball, but you've got the trackpad. I do kind of like the trackpad more to the side. I've got a Apple Bluetooth keyboard and Bluetooth Magic trackpad, and I have those in a single unit. And I quite like having the trackpad directly on the right-hand side of the keyboard rather than underneath the keyboard as a trackpad is normally found in a laptop computer. So, yeah, I think a modern incarnation of something along the lines of the Mac Portable.
Cool. For me, the two things that sort of jumped to mind was the first, because I always loved the Apple II, big surprise, but in particular, the traditional Apple II form factor. So not the 2C, not the 2GS, but the old, you know, the 2 Plus, the 2E. But they are ergonomically a nightmare. They're like 7.5 meters thick or so, just massively. And if you put them on a modern desk height, it's just a bit of a pain to work long-term on them. So I actually have a lower desk that I like to use when I'm on a 2E. So I would envision something like that. I'd love to see a reissued Apple II, like a 2E Plus, that was quite quite low. So not a 2C. I want the beige look and the big logo on top, and maybe something that flips up and enables cards at the back of it, but is thin at the front. Something, I don't know. But that took the design cues of that and looked like, hey, what if we never changed our mind about what was a fashionable computer and what would you get in 2015 with those exact design cues? I would dig something like that very much. Hopefully somebody will 3D print us one and give us all three of those at Kansas Fest. And the other thing that I've always liked was the frog design stuff from early Apple. That white look, the snow white stuff, I really like in particular. And so even just that sort of idea, the reality is modern tech is normally dark and mean and angry. I am tech and I am upset, and it's all stainless steel and black, and I'm as guilty as any. I will typically just get the darkest version of anything. I want the black monitor, the black keyboard, the black everything, and just as if I'm some cool guy. But the reality is, I like the white stuff, and I think it would be super sweet if there was a, like, say, a MacBook that had that design cue, that was a snow white MacBook. I dig it. And it was another thing, a long time for me to get used to trackpads, just like you, Michael. But for me, it was moving away from a trackball. I loved the trackball on the first few Macintosh portables I had, the MacBooks. I had an original 100 and I think a 140 and a 165, or maybe I'm reversing those, 145, 160, something like that. And I loved the little trackball. And yeah, it was a case that you'd open it up and pull it out every once in a while and get a Q-tip and clean them out, which is kind of ridiculous. But I just really liked the feel of it, and I was a trackball user. And then, you know, I'm very used to a trackpad now, but part of me always kind of thinks, like, wow, I wouldn't mind a little ball there. They're a little more fun. So little things like that, I suspect I would be in the market for purchasing. Would I regret them? Probably. But I would buy them. So there's an opportunity there for marketing people. That's what I say. On this particular one, though, the ThinkPad, I wouldn't purchase it. I think it's neat that they're thinking of doing it, but I didn't like the ThinkPad back then. I didn't like the look of it at the time. I never liked that industrial design. And so bringing it back just makes me not like it. It reminds me of how much I don't like it. Hey, yeah, that's a design that I don't like. Didn't like it then, don't like it now. But I think it's cool that they're thinking of doing it. So I'll give them thumbs up for that. And that is my thinking. I'd love to hear what the listeners think. So if you out there have looked at this ThinkPad and thought, oh yes, best thing ever, you'd buy it in a heartbeat, let us know. Or more, is there something that you, was there a particular look, a fax machine or mouse or monitor or whatever that you used to love and that you miss just looking at and you wish modern things could look like that? If so, let us know and we will talk about it on the next show. Speaking of which, did we get any feedback from previous shows? Anybody know?
Because I want a computer that doesn't have my email.
I don't know.
There's a long one. I can't find it.
Can someone look at them? Someone did at least give it to the...
We had a quick off-mic conversation, and none of us have access to email at the moment, but somebody, at least one person, did write in about the Apollo guidance computer. So maybe on next episode, we will have our stuff together, and there will be a host other than me who will actually take care of these sorts of things. Me? No, I barrel through. So thank you for the feedback. We're not reading it anyway. But trust me, if you were to write in feedback about this episode, we'd totally talk about it. Let's dive on to the news. So, it looks like I've got the first bit of news. You guys can just relax for a while. I'm taking the helm. So the first thing is the UK Computer Museum, the one you're probably thinking of, the National Museum of Computing. They are seeking what they are referring to as BBC microfixers. Now, this sounds like a mob term, but the reality is they have a large and presumably growing collection of BBC micros, and they have a small, presumably not adequate, collection of people who are able to work on them, repair them, and keep them up and going. So they're actually looking for people to do that. So if you are a vintage computer fan in the UK, love yourself a BBC micro, and know about it, you can actually put that knowledge to use for the National Museum of Computing. How cool would that be? I'll tell you how cool. cool. Very. On a scale of not to very, it's very. Bearing the red line. So we're going to have a link in the show notes about this. I don't know if this is a paid position or like an intern thing, or they're just going to hope you show up and fix stuff for them. I'm probably not making this up, and if you just show up and get hands-on with the computers, you probably won't get arrested. Who knows what would happen? I don't know, but we'll have a link in the show notes. We'll see what comes of it. And we're also going to link to the National Museum of Computing site itself, which I believe probably holds the record of website we have linked to most of all in the various episodes of this podcast. Going back to the beginning one, I'd love to count it up, but I remember got to be a dozen times we have talked about and then linked it to that particular website. But we clearly are fans, or maybe it's always just me. So do either of you guys know anything about the BBC Micro? If you were flown to the UK right now, would you be able to repair it for the museum?
I'm sure I could fake it.
That's what they're looking for.
Actually, I'm sure I've mentioned this before, but I actually had one of these for a summer, I think. There was a small North American release. So they did exist in the U.S., and I've sort of ever since wanted to get a hold of one, just because I kind of remember playing with it. I was still, you know, an Apple II guy, and so this was sort of foreign, sort of familiar, you know.
So was this so it was one that ran on your voltage and was NTSC?
Yeah.
Oh, see, that would be the sweet one to get. I didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, and it seems not to have existed in very large numbers. So, you know, I've looked for one ever since, and you, well, not ever since, but, you know, in my recent since. Yeah, right. I liked it. I'm pretty sure I didn't have a disk drive. So
Drives are overrated.
It was, I think
that's going to make a comeback.
I'm not sure even. I think basically everything I did on it was, okay, I'm going to turn it on, I'm going to do some stuff, and I'm going to turn it off again, and it's all gone.
earliest computers were all that way. BBC Micro, though, is one of the computers. Sinclair is the same way, that I think of it as being very much a culture of cassettes. Because whenever I look at things available online, like game-wise and stuff, one of the appeals is a massive catalog of UK titles for games that were not on the computers that were accessible to me. So hundreds and hundreds of games where I only get to see the covers of the cassettes and read the names of them and think, I wonder if it's fun. I want to play it so badly. But also it's the case that it typically seems to be collections of cassettes on, say, eBay for these old games when it comes to the Spectrum and when it comes to BBC Micro. So maybe not having a disk drive was prevalent for those models, even in the UK.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I don't understand why I never actually, you know, bothered to try to connect a cassette player. But I actually really don't recall if this. It was the school's machine or something. Except that I really have no idea how I had that.
Stole it from the Queen.
I mean, I did borrow it for a summer. I did return it. I really kind of like the look of it. You know, with the
Me
little
too.
Red keys.
Yep, I've always liked, that's another one with the industrial design I like very much.
And actually the colors, there was something I really liked about the color scheme, you know, the sort of color options you had on the screen. But, so anyway, I would love to play with one again sometime, but I think that's probably not what they're looking to hire.
I totally agree with you about the colors on the screen, though, which is something, for instance, I was never that keen on when it comes to the Spectrum. Like, the specky colors are particularly vibrant. Like, there's pinks and stuff that will just actually, I think, burn your retina away, so you have to be careful when you program. Whereas the look of on-screen stuff, if you look at, like, Elite on the BBC Micro, I like their bright colors, the lime greens and the yellows and things you get, and their pink doesn't seem to hurt me as much when I look at it. So, yeah, I of the UK computers, it's the BBC Micro's output that I like the best.
So, Michael, did the BBC Micro make it to you?
It did come down here, but not in any major way that I'm familiar with. I've only ever played on them a little bit back in the 80s, funnily enough. But it was something I never really pursued, because at that stage I had access to Apple II computers with floppy drives and the BBC Micro, as you said, I believe I was using a cassette tape to load things in, and that was just not a going thing for me, because I never actually had a computer of my own before I went to university. So my first introduction to personal computing was basically 64K of RAM, floppy drives. I sort of came in on top of the shoulders of others, not having to put up with the pain of cassettes and other, I should say, old hat stuff at that time. But I did like the styling of the machine and the color text. That was one of the things that really got my interests. It was a good solid machine. I liked the using it when I did, but it just didn't really do anything for me.
And there you go. The word from Australia. So, Paul, you've got our next thing. The 3COM Audrey. I have no idea what those words mean when they're put together. What is this?
Well, okay, so this what this is Paul didn't find any news, and so he has taken an eBay auction and made
Paul
it
is
news.
Now talking about himself in the third person. Paul has started to play basketball a lot.
But I just got one of these, so I'm kind of curious to play around with it. And I think it's from 2000, something like that. It's a internet appliance. So the 3COM had this idea that they were going to make a little internet appliance that you could put in the kitchen. It has this little keyboard with a infrared connection that it's not wired. It's actually kind of a little
madness.
Yeah, it's got a color screen. It's touch sensitive. It has a little web browser, and you can check your email. And you know, I think it has a little kickstand in the back. And I think the idea was really you put it in your kitchen just to whatever around the house. I think this was the kitchen though, because I think they planned, when I was reading up on it, they planned to have kind of like a range of these, and the Audrey was the only one that actually came out. But apparently. These things are actually somewhat hackable. You know, they run a version of Unix inside, and even though the internet that it used to connect to isn't really there, you can get an adapter. So I got an adapter to connect it up to Ethernet, and I'm still waiting to try it out. But it seems like a pretty cool thing. And the one I got was just kind of like miscellaneous loose pieces. But I was looking on eBay just to see, you know, what a good example of this is. And there is one. It's expensive. I'm not sure that I would recommend the one that we're linking to in the auction, but you can see the box and all the little stuff in it. And so I'm kind of, I don't know, it's kind of cute. I'm kind of curious to play around with it. And I hadn't really heard of this before. Just, you know, this thing showed up in my, eBay searches. So I thought, all right, well, this is something that one could play with a little bit. It's 3COM, but it's not related, I don't think, in any way to Palm, unfortunately. That would have made it even more interesting to me, I think. But
with Palm, if you have really big hands.
Right.
Huge, giant palms. This doesn't ship to Canada, this particular one, but it is located in Kansas City, Missouri, which I will happen to find myself in a short time. So I could just say, screw you, I'm picking it up.
Oh, what a coincidence.
Yes, we're all going to be in Kansas City. We should all bid on this and then meet there and argue on his lawn about who should give it to.
Right.
That'll go over well.
I mean, I think it probably is. I've seen people. So actually, one of the things I was really going to say to make this a little bit more newsy is just that there is a there's an Audrey hacking wiki. There's a sort of a community based around this thing, and it has a little CF card slot that lets you move software in and out. And you know, so if you want to play around with this, there's actually quite a lot of stuff on the Audrey hacking wiki about like what you can, how you can configure it to do different things. People use it to be like an MP3 player. I think it's pretty poor as a video player, but I'm kind of looking forward to just running through some of the steps that are already there on the hacking wiki and see what I can get it to do.
Cool. I like it. It's neat. It's definitely an example of an older industrial design. That's probably not going to make a comeback, though. Lenovo's not going to pick this up and put them out.
Yeah, I can't decide if I think it's kind of cool looking or just ugly. It's kind of hovering feeling there on that line.
Yeah, I'm erring a little bit towards the ugly side myself. But
Really? I was kind of
ugly in a cute
towards
way.
Cute, yeah.
Yeah, but what it says it's Wi-Fi, so is it WEP or WPA? Paul, do you know?
It's IR point to point. You have to orient it.
Yeah, I don't think it's Wi-Fi in any sense that we think of these days.
I think this person thinks it's wireless keyboard. That means Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah. No, right, it is. It is an IR keyboard, and it has to be right in front of the thing.
There you go.
Yeah.
But you can sort of, I think you can hang it on the back when you're not using
it.
Okay. Awesome.
These things, there are, if you actually search eBay for these things, there are several, you know, they're around at various prices. I kind of caved in on the one I got just because it was a cheap one.
Sure. But, and this one's really nice because it comes in a box and such. But the main thing is we'll link to the Audrey Hacking Wiki, and that's how we'll make it newsy.
Yep.
It's the games we play. So, Michael, we're turning to you. We're looking at you, Michael. Oh, we're watching you. Put that down.
Okay.
So, tell us about, and this is super cool, this 1985-style car navigation system.
Well, most of us take for granted that if we're heading off somewhere that we're not familiar with, that we can just punch in the address into our in-car navigator system or use a GPS app on our phone. But what would you do back in 1985? Well, to start with, the GPS satellite system didn't come online until 1995, so there goes that idea. And even when it did come online, it was fuzzed to 100-meter accuracy for non-US military use. But it seems that our friend Nolan Bushnell basically funded a little company called ETAC to come up with a navigation system. So the upshot is that what do you do if you don't have a satellite system? What they've done is that you can put in your starting point in the system, and then effectively uses dead reckoning to navigate across the digital maps that are stored in the system. And basically it adds sensors to the undriven wheels of the car. So it's not just a case of plugging it into the dashboard of your car. You've actually got to get sensors and everything added in. They've got a electronic compass at the rear windshield of the car. And between all of that and loading in the maps, you've got yourself a little in-car navigation system. But more than that, it was also, they needed the maps, so they had to figure out how to digitize the road maps, how to store those in there. So there was quite a lot of new groundbreaking technologies in it, and also implementations of existing technology, just the way that they created systems to assist in the digitization of the roadmaps, and it just struck me as just a very, very lovely solution to a problem that didn't really exist. You know, everyone at that stage basically pulled out their street directories out of the glove box of the car. I suppose how many people have got a street directory in their car glove box these days? So,
7.
One in every continent.
Might be guessing. Am I too low?
No, possibly a bit too high. But that they were taking maps that were freely available, digitizing them, getting them in the system, and then even just the problem of how do you get that map system into the car. So they looked at the various methods, discounted floppy drives, and they actually went back to using tapes. But, of course, everyone knows what happens to a cassette tape that when you leave it in the car. So they basically even developed an alternate cassette tape system so that it could actually withstand high in-car temperatures and still work. And there's some good photos in there of what happens to a standard audio cassette compared to their cassettes. So I don't think I would like to have been one of those cassettes that was, they got it marked here, 14 hours at 105 degrees Celsius. That's a little bit hot. I think they were going to the extreme.
That is awfully hot. I mean,
I was going to say, for those of you in the United States of America, 105 degrees Celsius equates to you don't really want to know.
Right.
It's like 250 degrees
or
something.
It is
right?
Above the boiling point of water. Yes, it will actually kill you.
Awesome. I think the heat in the car way before then, but just to see cassettes that have been through that temperature and not be warped and destroyed. And that was so that you could put 3.5 megabytes of data. That's right, folks, 3.5 megabytes. And the maps for the Bay Area where they were developing this were on 6 tapes. So not really the sort of thing I'd be wanting to do while I'm going down the highway where suddenly a prompt is, insert tape number 4.
The best would be then you accidentally insert like some sort of popular music tape, whatever it is, like driving you all over weird places. I was taken astray by Mr. Roboto.
Yeah.
I like everything about this, like the style of it. Like, people should go to this to read about it, but also just to look at the photos. It's amazing to look at these Kardashians and this. I almost said Kardashian, but that went to a weird place. And just to look at the maps, the whole thing is awesome. What I particularly like, though, is the when you view these things now, it's the same as viewing like a retro computing tasks that we'll give ourselves. And there's contests nowadays where people say, okay, I'm going to try to do something using an old computer kind of for fun. And it's neat to look back on something 30 years old because they're trying to solve this with the highest of high tech. But I read it as, how would you solve this with ridiculous small like hardware constraints of 30-year-old technology? So it's neat as a project, but at the time this was a, okay, boys, sky's the limit. What's the best technology available? And now I look at it and go, so cassettes? We went with cassettes, did we? So it's just glorious and wonderful. And I love the pictures. I love the way they approached the solving of this. It's super hands-on and super creative, and I just love it.
It's a very involved article too. I mean, like, unlike some of the things we link to, there's a lot of detail and it's all interesting. So definitely go read it.
The best part about it is that all the work that they did in digitizing those maps, they actually saw themselves towards the late 80s, so only a couple of years into actually putting this out into the market, only getting about only a couple of thousand units sold. They saw that this was not really going to be the way to go. And they basically concentrated on digitizing the maps because people were basically finding that there was actually a need for the digitized roadmaps. So they actually were onto that. And where has that all evolved in the 30 years? Well, the company got sold several times, ended up even with news, I think, Rupert Murdoch's company bought it at one stage, and then Sony. And now their IP has ended up in TomTom. So when you use your TomTom in-car navigator and any other phone GPS system that actually licenses those maps, you're using maps that based on what was actually generated 30 years ago. So the IP lives on as the base of our current day technology, which does use the GPS satellites that are slightly more accurate to within 100 meters.
Slightly. And also don't send you down the wrong road if your tires are slightly over or under inflated, because it's basically counting rotations.
Well, that was the thing. It said the problem was when you're on long, straight roads that the dead reckoning system basically started to slip, and you had the ability to actually use to update your position on the actual system. But you couldn't do that while the car was in motion. So they'd actually, back then, realized the dangers of operating this kind of equipment while you're supposed to be keeping your eyes on the road. And it's just, as Paul said, it's just an amazing article. It is a great read, and it also has Nolan Bushnell in it. So It's got everything.
It's all bases. Nice. Yeah, it's super, super cool. So we will link to that in the show notes. And we will also link to a one-sided version of Conan. And I don't mean like Conan who's like simple-minded or just makes weird arguments. I mean Conan for the Apple II, one of the great games. I love that game. One of the downsides, of course, is it's a disc-flipping game. Oh, that disc-flipping. So because of that, it limits its your ability to put it on ProDOS and run it on a hard drive is the thinking here. And so there was a request for that specifically. Hey, can we have a version of this that could be installed, like a ProDOS version, play it from a hard disk? So, really fantastic fellow named Peter Ferry, who's a software developer for Microsoft. In fact, basically, it's a guy who is, I think what he does for a living is analyze viruses and is like a fighter against them. So that's what he does. Kind of cool. But he began way, way, way back in the 80s as an Apple II developer. And he took up the task of this and has now created a single-sided file-based version of Conan. So you can play it. It's easier. Has a nice little write-up of how exactly it was done. So we'll link to that. And also we'll link to the place on Asimov where you can simply jump to the end and download the disk image. So super cool. Hooray for new versions of old games. This is a particularly good one. So if you are, for some reason, running a version of ProDOS and you are just saying, darn it, I refuse to go back to discs. I will only play games that can be on my hard drive. Well, Conan has now been unlocked for you, and hooray for that. So have either of you guys, well, presumably you've both played Conan, right?
No.
Oh, Michael, we'll make you play it at Kansas Fest because it's one of the greats. It is a fantastic arcade game for the Apple II, just so well implemented. But yeah, this had got me back, and I have now played it again because of this, and I'm super chuffed about it. So hooray for this.
This Conan is one of the games that I, it's one of the few games that I kind of repeatedly go back to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the things I've found quite impressive about it is how to describe this? There's a multi layers in the graphics. Like there are things that that pass behind other things, and knowing sort of how hard it is to do that, I'm impressed from a programmer standpoint that these things can be passing behind other things.
And it's so super smooth. You throw your axe, you do your jumps and your tumbles. It's great.
Yeah. So it's a really fun game. I think we mentioned one or two shows ago the work of 4AM, who has been going through and re-cracking things, getting rid of the pirate signatures and stuff on the front, and then writing up exactly how the
it's the write-ups. Yeah. Holy cow! If you're interested in this stuff, it's great, and I'm so delighted. Like 4AM is just doing the good work. Like it's just fantastic. But mostly it's these write-ups. So I follow 4AM on Twitter, and just every time I have to click through and just read the write-ups, which are really educational, but also hilarious.
Yeah.
Just the writing style, it's so fantastic. I have learned tons from them, but I laugh out loud every single time. I cannot believe how witty and just how insightful these are written. There should just be a book of them. They are amazing. Yeah. So yeah, even if you have just the remotest, mildest interest in this sort of thing, or if you're just really just interested in programming in a general way, you should be reading 4AM's write-ups because they are the funniest thing when it comes to computers that I have read in a long time. I adore them.
Yeah.
Adore them, adore them, adore them.
And so the reason I brought it up is that a little while ago, 4AM did the Conan. The version that I had when I was growing up and using this was, of course, not an original. And at the loading screen, there's a little horse that rides by, and it plays this song, which most people had never experienced before this had been recracked and brought out to the world. So I think that's one other kind of notable thing about this. So anyway, that's not to take away from the ProDOS, whatever.
ProDOSification?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's all good. Yeah, I'm just love this version, love everything 4AM's doing. It's just, yeah, it's all fantastic. So speaking of pretty things, Michael, you've got a photo gallery you want to present to the world about Casio, quote, smartwatches, close quote. What's up with that?
Well, I was stumbling through the internet, as you do. I was just actually looking to see about Casio smartwatches, because it was just something which I hadn't actually got round to getting in the day, and someone's basically offering me a smartwatch, as they called it, and I was just sort of checking out what was available from Casio. So I came across this gallery on The Verge, and basically this is a superb photo gallery of various models and styles of Casio watches. So you've got your calculator styles and sports watches, so everything that you could possibly want, but you didn't need to wait for either the Samsung Gear or the Apple Watch. So there's in here there are actually a lot of Casio watches that I wasn't even familiar with. There's some styles in here which actually, in hindsight, to Carrington's host topic, that I think I would like to see modern incarnations of some of these, the thermo scanner watch and a couple of others. They've got some great styles in here.
Well, the voice recorder ones. There's a couple that are really nice little built-in voice recorders.
Oh, I'm looking at the wrong thing. I'll tell you about this page. I was looking at a Seiko page because I was trying to find the Apple II compatible watch.
Oh, right, yes.
And I was sort of flipping through it and got to a picture of one that it's a regular looking watch, but then it also has kind of like a keyboard attachment, which you could in fact
wear. Oh my goodness, the Seiko Data 2000. I too am now looking at it. Fantastic. It's the Nintendo Power Glove of calculator watches.
I would love to walk around wearing that.
I'm coming to Kansas Fest, and I'm going to wear one of these the whole time.
Anyway, sorry, totally interrupted the Casio, because I went on my own mental journey there.
Delightful.
Off on a tangent. But yeah, there are some great styles in here, and really, I think that if someone... hey, Casio, I hope you're listening, bought out modern versions of these watch styles, I'd be in it in a shot.
Do you think the calculator watch will make a comeback?
Not necessarily the calculator watch. The styling that they've got in these older style watches, as I was saying, the Thermoscanner TSX 1300 from 1994...
Yep. But that one looks like if, say the cyberpunk people really got into plastic. This is like cyberpunk made of plastic. It looks like it's a little snap-off flashlight on the side. What is that big round thing stuck to it?
Maybe it's a pencil sharpener.
I hope so.
It says able to calculate surface temperatures of an object detecting its infrared radiation.
Okay, so that's zapping out a lot.
Yeah.
How long it's got a laser.
And it goes, ooh.
Pew, pew, pew.
That person is 10 degrees. I don't think they're feeling well.
That cassette is 104 degrees.
There's one with a prayer compass. There's one that's like bright pink with fat burning on it. I'm sure that's sold huge.
But back to that thermoscanner, this would be perfect for the TSA staff to surreptitiously detect people's temperatures to see if they're running a temperature and possibly have the Ebola virus. You know,
a friend of mine,
ever so subtle of walking around and pointing their wrist at people and going, ooh, they're running a temperature.
But they're not usually subtle. I have a friend who goes back and forth to China a lot. And when you land, just a person walks up and down the aisles and points an infrared temperature scanner at everybody's forehead. And if you read hot, you're staying on the plane for a while. Like, it's just until they tell. Like, it's crazy. Like, they're not subtle at all about it. So I'm sure the TSA isn't trying to be the subtlest and gentlest of the airline security people. That's not my experience. So I suspect they're going to want to step it up a notch.
But, so if you want to go for a stroll down retro lane and looking at smartwatches from the good old days, you'll enjoy this one.
Awesome.
I think a couple of episodes ago we talked about one, and I really am not quite sure if it was a Casio or not. I didn't see it in this list, but it was a little bit later, I think, and you actually programmed it from television. So you could hold like address book information.
That was the one that you would actually aim the watch at your computer screen, and it would load the data from there. Sort of used, I believe, you know, flashing characters and whatnot to as part of the data transfer method.
And if you watched it while it was happening, you would suddenly remember phone numbers that you thought you had forgotten.
Ah, excellent.
And also maybe speak with an accent if it goes wrong.
I think these might be the data bank, Castillo data banks. But I read into them a little bit, and apparently I was kind of curious. I would not mind having one, except that modern screens can't do it. Like, you have to get an adapter because the LCD screens are not sensed by the watch, which is kind of sad.
Same like with the light gun and the NES. Yeah.
Yeah. So with I think anything past Windows 2000 or something like that, you actually had to get like this little plug and play little adapter to point at your watch.
Well, then I'm out.
Yeah.
Very cool. I like it. Good choice, Michael. And Paul, it looks like you've got a last thing to quickly wrap us up, an anniversary of sorts?
Yes, so it's the anniversary of the announcement of the IBM System 370. So this is the successor to the System 360, and ultimately this wound up being like the Z machines or something, right?
Yes, but, yeah. This is a little bit before my time. I started with the System 390 machines, MVS 390. But yes, ultimately this has all evolved over time into the Z series,
mm-hmm.
which is the big scary hardware of today. But there was first. So this is the first series of IBM mainframes that didn't use core memory. It went with the monolithic main memory, which I believe was the start of your, I suppose, current memory style. But the main thing was is that it was moving away from cores. So we're able to get more memory into a smaller amount of space.
Yeah, and actually, as you mentioned that, I think it reminds me that I don't think I said what anniversary this is, this was June 30th, 1970, so it's like the 45th.
Yep. So, yeah, those mainframes, they've been around, and, fun boxes. I don't know if I've quite got the space downstairs to put one of these in, or even any of the mid-range of the day. But
I think everybody secretly kind of wants one, though. Like, if you had tons of space and you didn't have to maintain them, I think I'd love to have big iron and a bunch of reel-to-reel tape recorder data things beside it, just chugging along. I'd love to come home to that.
Yeah, it wouldn't need to be computing anything. It needs to have a little program that will like run the tapes, you know, in fits and starts.
Also, I would want to do like text messaging, because like sent from my System 360 would be like the best subject or the best sig line ever. That'd be great.
But all the trouble of getting the computer room, the false floor, and everything into the house, you'd have to do a little bit of renovation work there, Carrington, to get.
Well, I'm in a condo, so really I'd have to purchase the people below me. So, excuse me, I need to buy your house. Why? I need a false floor. Get out, or I will thump. So happy birthday to the system, to the announcement. Happy birthday to the announcement of the System 370. Slow news week, folks.
When you were growing up, you learned you were facing a world full of competition. There were so many of you with all the right credentials. To succeed today, you need a way to stand out from the crowd, to make the most of your special kind of music. Introducing Amiga, the computer that gives you undreamed of creative power to work faster and more productively. With built-in color graphics no other comes close to. Amiga, the first personal computer to give you a creative edge.
So, I'm the host, and that's awesome, because I get to pick a gift idea. And I had one gift idea selected from quite a while ago, and 5-10 minutes before we started recording, I switched to something else because I bought something today that has worked out great for me. And I realized, oh, it's the kind of thing that most people into retro computers should have or probably do have some version. But if you're looking to pick up a really inexpensive gift for something that's really useful is a tiny tool set with the particular sort of Torx heads and screwdriver heads that are needed for computers. So a little computer repair thing. I am constantly searching for, you know, a T3 Torx head and all these little things or bits. And I finally found a set that's super cheap, comes in an amazing case, and has all the other little bits you want. Poking tools and tweezers and a couple of spudgers and all, like, just everything. It's technically a telecommunications set, but it has become my favorite new little computer repair tool set. And what I liked about it is here in Canada, I bought it at Canada Computers for, I think, $12. So we're going to link to the only sort of international online site I could find with it is Amazon. So I'm going to link to that, but you should look around locally. And here's a heads up, though. There are three versions of this tool set, and it appears in lots of brands. It's one of these things that you can just, I think it's called private branding, where a company will just decide we're going to put it out and call it our thing. So they all come in the same look, but sometimes they're blue, sometimes they're red. I got an orange one with the ICANN logo on it, but that's just because they've private branded it. But it comes in a nice little rubberized plastic container, nice and hard, but soft on the outside. Comes with the entire Torx set, starting with T2, going up to T15. Well, T through to T10, and then a T15. But then all the other little screwdriver heads, a couple little nut heads, extenders, two things that look like big guitar picks, but they're spudgers. They've got a thick part on the bottom and then a thinner part at the point, and they're used specifically to pry things open. So it's a great shape for a spudger. It's got tweezers. It's got a little suction cup with a ring. So if you need to pick up something, you can use that. It even comes with the little tool to get a SIM card out of something. It's really, really nice. But there are three versions, and the particular version we're going to link to is the one you'd want to get because it has all the Torx things. So if you're working on old laptops all the time, they're going to throw out, oh, now you need a T5, now you need a whatever. So it's really handy to have them, and it's super cheap. Great little stocking stuffer. So, you know, I got it for 14, I think, Canadian. It's probably available for $10 or less US in a lot of local places. So look for it. I'm loving it. Highly recommend it. So that is my choice, the little 39 or 38 piece tiny tool set. Perfect for the retro computer tinkerer. And speaking of purchasing things, it's auction time. So we are going to, as usual, select a couple of things. In my case, three things, which is rare. I normally try to pick one of things that are or have recently been available on eBay or other places that you might want to purchase for yourself. So my main choice this week is a Apple Studio Display. I particularly like the late versions of what was the model M4551. That is the 15-inch Apple LCD monitor that came out originally in the light blue, but then was released when Apple went into that Batman phase where they put out the eMate stuff. They released a version of this in that dark blue, and it's a lovely monitor. And what's particularly nice about it is it uses a connector that's easily adaptable to modern things. So you can get a VGA to Mac adapter thing on this. It's not using the weirder Apple monitor adapter connectors that came later, but also on a little side port, it takes regular composite in. And I've used one of these with early composite computers, but not with an Apple II, but I have used it with a bunch of things where if you just need to plug in an old computer, you've got composite in and it just sort of upscales it to 640 by 480, I think is the display on this. So not a big display resolution, but if you're looking for older things, it's awesome. It's adjustable height-wise and leans back and looks like something Batman would own. So super cool. And what I like about it, it's currently only $80 with no bidders. Now, it's a new listing, so who knows what will happen, but maybe nobody will know about it but you, and you'll pick it up cheap. It doesn't ship to Canada, so I will not be bidding against you. So that's my main choice. I have two other quick ones I'd like to mention as well. The first is a Mac Portable Dummy. Those are those empty shell dummy computers that were created to just go in stores and display. Here's an option. And here's one for the original Mac Portable from Dutch Apple Centers. So it was used a long time ago in the Netherlands, and it ended and it had no bidders. So it was €80, which is, you know, $90 or something like that US, but it never got bid bid on. So I'm thinking maybe it's going to get relisted. So I'm just bringing it up, saying here it is in the Netherlands, willing to ship worldwide. If you want a Mac portable, but you don't want to have to bother with all the trouble of having one that actually does something, then here you go. You can have something that just looks like a Mac portable, but doesn't yellow. So there are some advantages. So there's that. And the other quick one I'm going to pick is something that will have ended by the time you hear this, and I apologize, but the Mac 2CI is an old Mac that one of the particular ones that I liked. I had one for, and it was a great, you know, workhorse computer for a long time, and I really liked the form factor. If you tip it on the side, it looks like the Quadra 700. I really like the 2CI. They sometimes go for kind of ridiculous money, and there is a 2CI right now on eBay with the original box, keyboard, a couple of cards, tons of stuff, like tons of discs, tons of cables, just a boatload of stuff. And it's functional, doesn't ship to Canada, but it's currently only at $52. So now, it also has 1 hour and 34 minutes left. So unfortunately, unless Paul edits
There's no way.
And can actually edit this show in less time than it took us to record it and get it out, this will unfortunately have ended, and since it has been, so you will have missed it. But I'm bringing it up because it does show you that the it's best to hold out. Computers, sometimes you want that particular model. I want a Quadra 700. I don't really want one enough to buy one, but I kind of would vaguely like one. And they often go for $700, like just ridiculous asking price. Don't be tempted to give in to that kind of nonsense. The ones you like will come around. There are so many of this, and frankly, the people who like old computers are dying off, and their collections will just get cheaper and cheaper and dumped. And if you can outlive everybody else, you will eventually own everything. So it's a waiting game, folks. And this is an example of how you can pick up a 2CI for $52. Don't spend $700 on one. So those are my choices. Michael, what have you got?
Well, nothing in quite the quantities that you've just done, but I've got here a, as fate would have it, a 1970s IBM System 370 operating training manual. So it's a set of two, but interesting, as in the day, it is a two-binder collection of photocopies of IBM documentation from a ring-bound edition. But if you wanted to look at some internal documentation on operating your System 370, perhaps you've got the desire to buy one and install it in the garage, well, this is probably what you're going to need.
So, nice. I probably am not going to need that. But it is very much in keeping with the quote-unquote news of the week. So I say well chosen. That's what I say. And what about you, Paul? What have you got to round out the show?
Okay, well, so I have several things. One that I thought of as you were talking about the gift idea. If you can't, you know, if you don't want all those torque screws, there's AutoDual used to come with a small little screwdriver set. So I will put a link to a AutoDual for the Commodore 64 that comes with the toolkit as a
feely. Did the Apple version of AutoDual come with the toolkit?
I believe it did.
Oh,
I have one toolkit.
Now, these toolkits that come with are the kind of that you get in Christmas crackers. So, well, it's a toolkit. Okay.
There's toolkits and toolkits.
Yes, it does. I'll give you that. It does have a little wrench.
I don't think they're actually... I think they are real tools.
Technically, everything's a tool if you swing it hard enough.
That's right. Okay. The another sort of whimsical one is there is a Apple II mystery cable. For $5, buy it now. Shipping from Canada.
Go Canada.
I don't know what it is. neither does the seller. It may not be for an Apple II, but one end will fit in a Disk II controller, and the other end, I think, is like an RS-232.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. I have no idea what this would have connected to.
Yeah. The seller would have known if it was something obvious. So if you know the answer to the mystery and need such a cable...
you can get it for $5.
Here it is. Actually, all my things are pretty miscellaneous. Let me just quickly point out there is a vintage Eagle computer auction. I don't know very much about the Eagle computer. It's a CPM, I think a relatively small scale CPM machine. This is probably an Eagle 2. It's an all-in-one machine. It has a monitor and a keyboard and a disk drive. And it's right now it's going for a bid of 99 cents. So that's good. It's from somebody who clearly has no idea what it is, you know, looked around on the web a little bit, to find out something about Eagle Computers and just started it at a low bid. It might be sort of interesting just because I know there aren't many of them. Keep an eye on that if that's something you're interested in.
Yeah, cool.
The seller also has two feedback, something. But, I mean, I guess, worst case, you lose $38.
Right.
So, and then I guess the last thing, I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole on these, but I came across a Panasonic HHC, I forget what the number is, 1400, something like that, which is a handheld computer. And I looked into these a little bit. I'm going to link to one that there's a particular seller that seems to have a bunch of these, actually, and they're all starting at $9.99, so not a big commitment. But I'll also link to a, kind of like a reference auction for a much more complete set that's being sold for $130, which also, given what's in there, isn't maybe so bad. But one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting about this is it's a 6502-based calculator. So if I can get to the machine language, you know, programming, I would sort of know how to speak this calculator's language, which I think, which is one of the things that made me sort of interested in it in the first place. But
not that amazing printer that comes with it.
Yeah, it has a tiny little
printer.
It actually has quite a few accessories. So in the reference auction, if you really, you know, want to get all the accessories, there's sort of like a. I'm not sure exactly what all these things are, but there's kind of like an interface box, and there's something that can, I think, read chips you put in. The calculator itself, I think, in the back has some slots that you can put in ROMs. So if you can figure out a way to burn a ROM and put it in there, I think it comes with some form of fourth maybe in it, and you can get a Microsoft Basic ROM, although I've never seen one except on the sort of like. Wikipedia type pages, but anyway, it looks kind of interesting. I am not quite sure that I'm ready to, you know, give out $130 for this whole big kit, although it is really tempting. So therefore, I will give you the auction in case it's tempting enough for someone listening. But I think I would kind of like to play with this a little bit. So anyway,
cool.
Go 6502.
What I like about it is I was just wondering what HHC stands for right at the moment you said it's a handheld computer. I went, oh, well, that answers my question. Oh, I should back up a bit. One thing I forgot to mention about one of my choices, or my main choice, the Studio Display. One of the reasons I think that that particular one I'm picking is not going to go for a lot is it doesn't ship with a power adapter. So it's saying, hey, it knows it works, but there's no power adapter. And I think that will scare off bidders. But the reality is the power adapters for these things are much more readily available than the monitors themselves. So if you search for the model number, the M4551 on eBay, you will frequently find the power adapters for these. It takes the exact same power adapter as the earlier one, so it doesn't have to have the Batman color, and they're typically available for $50 or so. So it's very easy to make this into a complete monitor. So just want to throw that out there. So that wraps up our eBay stuff, and in fact, it pretty much wraps up the show, other than our, as we say in the show notes, closing discussions / anything to add? ? So let's go around the room and see if there's anything that anybody wants to say other than just basically shouting the word Kansas Fest into your microphone. So, Paul, what have you got for us? What is new in Paul Land or coming up?
So I'm not allowed to shout Kansas
Fest? Yes, you are. You are encouraged.
Kansas
to
Fest.
Encouraged to shout Kansas Fest.
Yeah, I guess that's, as the... website says not many sleeps away, but yeah, I'm sort of thinking about what I'm gonna bring, and realizing that I don't have enough time to prepare and bank sleep and stuff. But that'll be pretty excellent. So otherwise, yeah, nothing sort of too focused and specific at
there
the moment.
Is nothing but Kansas Fest. What about you, Michael? Do you exist in an all Kansas Fest vacuum like us?
Well. Apart from the fact that I am going, but yeah, it's getting all the bits and pieces together. So lately I've been playing with a USB high-speed video streaming for the Apple II computer. So basically it's a USB developer board with a FIFO, and then you just hook that up to the USB port of a laptop and then start a little app, and you can view your Apple II's video as a window on your computer. Now, the reason I'm doing this is that I was looking for a portable method of displaying the output from my Apple II, And this basically allows me to have a dedicated little netbook, which I've got. I hook it up. I can see the video from the Apple running on one side. Then I have all my connectivity software hooked up back to the serial port of the Apple itself. So it makes for a nice little portable system for viewing the computer, getting disk images up to and down from the computer, and just generally playing around. So I'm going to bring that adapter board with me to Kansas Fest and see if there's anyone else interested, and see where it goes from there.
Exciting and amazing that you're going to come over to this side of the world, south of me, but this side of the world in general, to come to Kansas Fest this year.
Well, it's something I've always wanted to do, and I was all geared up to do it back in 2013, but just couldn't manage it for other non-computer related reasons, and it was a shame because that was the year that was turned up. But I've managed to get everything sorted out and time off, and so I'm headed over to the United States. So passport had to be renewed, all the paperwork, so it's been a little bit more involved than just a quick trip down to OzKFest back in April, but I'm really looking forward to spending a week or so as my first Kansas Fest.
Very exciting, and it's a great one to choose because this is the last Kansas Fest.
Well, it's not. Always the last one. It's the last
but
one
see, that's
until
the
next
is,
one.
That's exactly what I normally say, and if you were listening to this and thinking, oh no, I should have gone, I missed it. Yes, you should go because you're going to miss it. Like, this is not going to be an event that goes on for 1,000 years. There will be a point where it was the last Kansas Fest, and if you don't ever go, you are going to miss out. And it is just crazy because I think there's a very good chance the last Kansas Fest will be one where we don't know it's the last one. Things will come up and they'll simply fall apart. The people that put a crazy amount of effort into actually managing and getting the event to go can't do it 1 year. They'll lose the location. They can't find another one. It'll fumble. It won't happen. And this is the kind of thing that you lose that inertia. They don't do it 1 year. They might just never do it again. And you won't know in advance that you just missed the last one. So if you want to go, it is crazy that you risk every year not going. I used to, and it's bonkers. And once I sort of really realized and internalized that if you want to go to this thing, you better go because I mean, come on, it's 2015. How long is this going to last? And it is super fun and super worth it. And it's a highlight of my year. So I honestly think you should be just going. You should be going this year. Get in touch and say, I want to come. Work it out. And if not, then definitely come next year. If there is one, you see. So I'm super looking forward to it. It is, again, like I say, one of the highlights of my year. I am completely unprepared and will be basically contributing nothing this year. Coming down my motorcycle, so I'll be bringing almost no technology, no real old iron. I'm not doing a session. I haven't coded anything. Like, my big vow this year was I'd show up with having, you know, done a program. I've done nothing. So I'm just going
to... There's a week left.
So I'm going to get nothing done. I know me. So what I'm going to try to do this year is, for the first time, enter Hackfest. So I'll be there. I'll have no excuse. Maybe I can do some programming there if I haven't done any ahead of time. So all I want to do this week is see if I can re-enable on a laptop the whole, you know, use a CC65 to make modern, or use C to write old software. So if I can get that enabled again, or maybe just bring down a computer and enable that while I'm down there or something, because then I can code relatively quickly in C. So if I can get myself a big monitor in C, maybe I could do something. I don't know. I got nothing. I might just be hanging out and watching and being impressed by everybody else. That's pretty much how I'm going to take it this year. But still, I'm super looking forward to it, and I cannot wait. And the other thing I've got going is our listeners. Oh, how I love them. And thank you so much for listening to this episode of the RCR, the Retro Computing Roundtable. You can find all the notes and stuff we've talked about. All those links that we enticed you with are over at our website, which is rcrpodcast.com. There you can find a link to the forum. You can also, I think, there find a link to talk to us on Twitter, but you don't need a link. You can just remember it. It's RCR Podcast. We are at RCR Podcast. What did you think it would be? Come on, follow us on Twitter. Hang out. We'll chat. It's awesome. If you want to, you can also send us feedback by email. Remember that thing used to be called email before Twitter? The cool kids are back using it again. You can email us at feedback@rcrpodcast.com. We are a proud proud saluting member of the Throwback Network. Thanks, guys, for bundling us with some other great shows. If you like this one, you can find other ones just like it, but maybe not quite as good, over at throwbacknetwork.net. If you want other people to find out about us, you could review us on iTunes. But if you want to keep us secretly just between you and me, that's fine. We don't care. As long as you listen, that's all we're asking for. And thank you for listening this week. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. I think our next show might even be recorded at or around Kansas Fest, which would be super cool. Might be a live episode. Who knows? I don't know. We have no plans. You don't know our life. Stop holding us to these things. Meanwhile, thanks for listening. And until next time,
Retro Compute.